Welcome. I'm so glad you're here. My name is Renee Coleman, and I'm going to be reading to you from my new book, Icons of a Dreaming Heart, The Art and Practice of Dream-Centered Living. So the setup is a dream group has gathered, and in that dream group there is a dreamer who's rather reluctant to share her dream. Well, the dreamer begins rather reluctantly. There's not much to work with. The whole dream lasted less than a minute. Let's see, I say by way of encouragement, as everyone in the room settles in to receive the dream. Listen. Can you hear that? It's the sound of deep inner listening gathering itself to receive the dream. For it's not enough to passively listen to dreams. The endeavor is to actively, that is, receptively listen, to hear into dream images, rather like the variety of listening that is necessary in improvisational theater. We want to listen as though creative life entirely depends upon it. It helps, therefore, to turn our visual attention away from the dreamer, as this tends to be distracting. Additionally, it helps to have an image of active, receptive listening. So, for example, when I settle in to tend a dream, I invariably imagine that I am mounted on the back of a rather high-strung horse, the horse of dreams. Together, this horse of dreams and I ride out into the field of dreams, which is a vast plain of possibility, wherein essentially anything and everything can happen. And does. Once there, in a heightened anticipatory state, yet as inwardly still as I can manage to be while on the back of a high-strung horse, I wait with the deep ear inside my chest, the heart's ear, wide open and ready to receive the dream. For in this realm of possibility, on the back of this noble, majestic creature, with my heart's ear wide open, I am rendered radically receptive. That is, able to meet and greet the dream on the dream's terms. Out there in the field of dreams, the dream images, the dreamer, and now I begin to have a shared imagination. When we listen this way, it's important to resist the temptation to look for meaning, to abstract away from receptive listening. Any thought as to what an image might mean invariably renders us unable to be present to the dream as it unfolds. Therefore, as mentioned, it helps to have an image of receptive listening, a human dream catcher, perhaps, a living, breathing, curious creature, loving and still wet-sinewed enough to endeavor receiving the images of another. Or you might want to imagine one of those old-fashioned ear trumpets. Only instead of it being made of animal horn or snail shells, sheet iron or silver, imagine it rather as being the shape of receptive listening, inviting you to venture out from the ear with your hearing in order to meet the images of the dream. For it is this gift of our receptive listening that actually gives body to the image, as though the image steps through the threshold of our active hearing into substantial being. The inner ear then becomes the eye, and we begin to actually see the images before us. So even though dream images are never more than subtle bodies, in a very real sense we imaginally enflesh the image, giving it essential substance and imaginal matter with our receptive attention. Soul seeing is tactile. So as we begin to see images before us, as we touch them, that is, as we feel them further into being. And what we discover by doing this is that we too are touched by their being. In other words, it's our perception that brings the images further into being. But their being simultaneously brings us closer to our own. From there, it is our ongoing willingness to tend the images as living beings, our willingness to befriend them, to host them as though guests, that maintains them and keeps the dream alive. This then becomes a practice for actively tuning in and turning on our inner ears, listening as though our lives depend upon it. For the life of the image does indeed depend upon our capacity to do this. The image itself exists as an autonomous, subtle body, but the life of the image depends entirely upon lending our receptivity to enflesh the image's being and becoming. Without our ongoing active participation in images this way, they haven't much life beyond the initial dream. Their lives, we soon discover, are through ours. When we lend our imaginal capacities to the images and dreams, we give them somewhere else to be. For what has been said here about hearing and seeing imaginally into the dream can also be said with regard to the other senses. The senses of smell, of taste, and touch, all of which have corresponding organs that are located in our bodies, come together inside the heart as an organ of perception. Working this way, we lend our imaginal bodies to the images of dreams. As we offer them our senses and our mindful attention, we develop imaginal capacities even as we work. Dreamer and dream image, each informed by the other. Thus, we lend ourselves to the task of what the poet Keats called soul-making. "I am certain of nothing," he wrote in a letter, "but the holiness of the heart's affections and the truth of imagination."